Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show where we don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So good to have you back, as all of our dear brothers and sisters and friends out in Washington, D.C. sit in the dark, and there's a good chance that Congress may not convene in the morning, and that, I think the Supreme Court's already gone home, but lots of government workers will be staying home tomorrow, quite possibly due to the blackout. And what could be a better way to start the week? Other than with the worldview right here, the pulse of conservative talk on the internet. So glad to have you back. All right. Now, do we want to jump right into the news, or do we want to tell stories, funny stories about our personal life? We'll jump right into the news. Yeah, we'll jump right into the news because we probably have, a relatively boring personal life. I mean, all those drones that are circling over the McBurney compound, I mean, they're just reporting back saying, you know, do we have to keep this up? Please. Please. Anyway, I want to start down in Edmond, Oklahoma, a tragic tale. There was a ruckus apparently at Victory Church in Edmond, Oklahoma. Sad story. A woman apparently was playing tambourine too loudly during services. And when she refused to stop, she was escorted out by an off-duty sheriff's deputy. Once outside the church, the offensive tambourine player, broke free from the deputy and tried to get back inside the church, we think, to play more tambourine. Well, the deputy, unfortunately, was forced to pepper spray and then tase the unruly tambourinist. Yeah. Now, I've got a quote here. I got this from KFOR.com, which is likely a radio station there in the Edmond, Oklahoma area. Now, according to a sheriff's department spokesman, he said the woman was not filled with the Holy Spirit, and she was not being very Christianly, and therefore she was pepper sprayed, and then tased. At that point, we think she dropped the tambourines. They say she was staggering and her speech was slurred. Authorities found prescription pain medication in her possession. No report on the toxicology test. I don't know. They don't do toxicology on living people, do they? No. Anyway, no report of whether or not she was stoned. But very highly likely, ladies and gentlemen, that she was probably not a very good musician. She was like one of those musicians, the guy who always shows up at the party with his guitar, and he wants to entertain the crowd. Chances are that guy's not very good. The guy who's really good is the guy you have to cajole into, you know, please, take out your guitar. Jump on the piano, Bill, come on. But the one who shows up and just starts shaking the tambourines, you can bet they're not that talented. Although generally, those people don't deserve to be pepper sprayed or tased, although I have been at some parties where that was the case. But I haven't seen that happen at church yet. So there you have it from Edmond, Oklahoma, the state of the evangelical church in America. All right, but more serious stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Now this story, I pulled this story down from CBS in Tampa, Florida via WorldNet Daily. This is Dateline Venus, Florida. A young lady, 32-year-old young lady named Heather Town. her home was lifted off its foundation in a tornado. And she and her 3-year-old daughter, Anne Marie, were thrown 200 feet into nearby woods. The mother was found by authorities clutching the child. And the 3-year-old child survived. Heather Town died at the scene. Anne Marie, at last report, was in stable condition at Tampa General Hospital. Authorities credit the mother with shielding the child from debris and barbed wire. that likely would have killed the child and indeed killed the mother. But the child survived. So this story struck me for a couple of reasons. First, it's a testimony to the power of a mother's love and the strength, even physical strength, of the maternal instinct. But the other thing that struck me about the story was there's no mention of the father in the entire story. And whether the woman was divorced, estranged, whatever, there's just no mention of the father at all. And it just strikes me so often that the mainstream news media acts as if fatherhood is unnecessary and fathers don't exist. And while this is a touching story of a mother's love, I would have liked to know what the father thought of all this. That's all. All right. Now, on to some political news. I've got to go into the justice file for an update on the big story of the week. The big story of the week, conservatives, Republicans, I should say Republicans primarily, scratching their head this week, scratching their collective noggins this week, trying to figure out why it is John Roberts joined the liberals on the Supreme Court to uphold the final last step in the takeover of the American medical system, the final socialist nail in the coffin, so to speak, upholding Obamacare. Well, listen to this story from the Associated Press. Chief Justice John Roberts appeared last Friday at a conference hosted by the Judicial Conference of the District of Columbia Circuit. Very prestigious organization, I'm sure. He appeared there one day after the Supreme Court said the federal government can require citizens to buy stuff. In this case, health care. Health insurance, I should say. Now, the impromptu 35-minute session featured Chief Justice John Roberts answering questions from a bunch of judges and other low-rent, hypocritical lawyers. Yeah. None of the low-rent, hypocritical liars, lawyers, and judges asked Roberts directly about the notorious health care decision. But they did ask him questions that were hitting all around the bullseye, apparently, according to this article. Roberts responded with one quip after a lawyer asked him whether he was going to Disney World now that the court has adjourned for the summer. So, yeah. So socialized medicine to these lawyers and judges, it's like a Super Bowl win. I'm going to Disney World. Are you going to Disney World, John? John responded that he wasn't going to Disneyland, but that he is going to what he called an impregnable fortress. Apparently, he's going to go out on a little vacation, kind of get out of the public view. Forget what he called the impregnable fortress. I can't tell in the story where that is. Oh, he planned to teach a class for 2 weeks in Malta, the Mediterranean island nation, which he referred to as an impregnable island fortress. Yeah. All right. Well, John. Anyway, all you Republican friends of mine, and I have lots of Republican friends, and I've been warning you for years that this strategy of trying to win the culture war by packing the Supreme Court with conservatives had failed. And this is the final nail in that coffin. John Roberts is a liberal. He was a liberal. He was a liberal the whole time. Everybody's shocked. Everybody's dismayed. But John Roberts was just a liberal. He was a liberal appointed by a liberal. Elected by foolish, short-sighted conservatives. Duped again. We were all duped again. No, I wasn't duped. I didn't vote for George W. Bush. And I certainly didn't lobby for John Roberts. Anyway, let's get back to this conference at which the Chief Justice, Republican appointee John Roberts, close friends now with Elena Kagan. And who's that other really skinny one who looks like she's already passed away and that they're just propping her up in her chair? Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They're all good buddies now. Anyway, this conference at which Mr. Mr. Roberts was not asked any direct questions, but was asked about Disney World and made some pithy little quips about the fact that he's finally succeeded and helped destroy America. Now, this conference was at Nemacolin Woodlands Resort and Spa, just southeast of Pittsburgh. It was entitled Science and the Law, according to the Associated Press. It focused on how social sciences and psychology affect the way courts are perceived by the public, as well as how judges go about making decisions when such sciences come into play. Okay, I can translate that for you. A godless heathen festival of so-called intellectuals tickling each other's ears about how smart they are. An appropriate place for John Roberts to dispatch himself to an impregnable fortress like the island of Malta. I just want to remind John Roberts, you're not going to be able to hide from God on Malta when he requires an explanation of why you've done the things you've done, Mr. Roberts. Anyway, was there anything else I wanted to say about the Supreme Court decision? Let me scan my memory banks. No, I pretty much don't care. I've got other things going on that are far more important. Let's get to those, ladies and gentlemen. Let's dive into the personhood file. We're going to start in China. The husband of a Chinese woman, this is from Yahoo News in Canada. The husband of a Chinese woman whose forced abortion 7 months into her pregnancy caused uproar. Well, the husband has disappeared. Speaking of fathers and where are they, this one has been disappeared. That's according to relatives. And the woman who suffered the abortion, the forced abortion at 7 months, she says her family is being harassed on a daily basis. Feng Jianmei had to go through the butchering of her child earlier this month in the northern province of Shaanxi because she failed to pay a hefty fine for exceeding China's strict one-child population policy. Now, the case caused an outcry when photos emerged online. Photos of Feng lying in a hospital bed next to her baby's bloody corpse, prompting an official probe. An official probe, ladies and gentlemen, that concluded action should be taken against the perpetrators. But relatives said last Tuesday that Feng's husband, Deng Jiyuan, had gone missing as of last Sunday. He's been disappeared. Calls made to police and government officials in China, at last report, have gone unanswered. Now, the relative of Feng Jianmei, the mother, the relative added that since last Sunday, scores of unidentified people have been harassing the family. According to reports, it's unclear who the protesters are, but online reports suggest that they had been hired by local authorities to harass this family after the government allowed the butchering of her child. They've now hired people to harass this family. Ladies and gentlemen, this brings to mind, I was on a plane earlier this week, and I reread a book. I reread a small, short book that I read, I believe, the first time when I was 14 years old. And I just reread it. I think I might have reread it maybe 10 or 15 years ago, but I reread it again. 30 years later, I reread the book. It's called No Other Doctrine by Cornelius Stamm. It's an exposition on dispensational theology, but it's also an exposition on the state of the church and the culture. And the book was written in 1970, and the author lamented the state of the culture and lamented the state of the church. And all through the book, he lamented the state of the church because the church has abandoned doctrine in favor of seeker-friendly growth programs. And he talked about the state of the culture, the sad state of the culture, circa 1970. He talked about the hippies and the drugs and the rebellion and the spirit of Antichrist. This is 30 years ago. No, 1970? How long ago was that? That's 42 years ago he wrote this book. And, you know, basically saying, how long, O Lord, can this go on? And throughout the book, he talked about the professing church. I said the professing church. And it struck me because I recently read I recently read a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And Bonhoeffer talked about the confessing church. So I'm reading Stamm's book. He's talking about the professing church. Dietrich Bonhoeffer talked about the confessing church. And there's a big difference between the professing church and the confessing church. Because the professing church are people who profess to be Christians. The confessing church are people who will actually do something about it and confess their faith in Jesus Christ. And acknowledge the fact that there is a God, even to the point of social discomfort. And I say that because here in America, ladies and gentlemen, if you confess the Lord Jesus Christ, you may be subject to some social discomfort, a bit of social stigma, sneers, giggles, laughs, chuckles, insults, maybe. But at some point, in the not too distant future, each one of us will be called upon to confess the Lord Jesus Christ. And my question to you is, will you confess him? Will you confess him when there is the possibility of social stigma, discomfort, being disinvited from parties, being uninvited, losing friends, being made to feel unpopular? Will you confess him? Will you confess him, ladies and gentlemen? Do you profess to be a Christian, or will you actually confess? Because one day, in the not too distant future, we may be in a position like Feng Jianmei in China and their family, where the confession of right and wrong doesn't mean social stigma, but it could mean death. Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. I had an opportunity this week to interface with both the confessing church and the professing church. Went to a fairly large church this week to gather signatures for the personhood initiative here in Colorado. For those of you who may not know, here in Colorado, we are trying to change the law to reestablish the God-given right to life of every innocent human being by establishing the unborn child as a legal person, because in Colorado, a legal person has a right to life And both the citizens and the government have an obligation to defend that right. So we're putting an initiative on the ballot, hopefully, to change the law. And I saw a near miraculous transformation amongst the senior staff of a fairly large church. We went in for an evening service, and the security personnel, senior staff, even the pastor seemed a little bit trepidatious, maybe even a little bit nervous about having invited us in to hold our signs and ask people if they would protect innocent life by signing the pro-life personhood petition. A little trepidation, a little bit of nervousness. I could feel it. I could sense it in the air. And after that evening service, we were kind of kept off to the side in the main lobby, and we didn't collect a whole lot of signatures. I was a little bit discouraged. But we came back the following morning, Sunday morning, to gather more signatures. There were a lot more people at the church. And after the first service, I decided I'm not going to stay over here standing off to the side. I'm going to go stand right in the middle of the lobby in front of the main exit. I'm going to hold my sign high in the air. And come what may, let the chips fall, whatever cliche you want to throw in. I decided to be a little bit more assertive. And in doing so, we made sure that every single person exiting that church had an opportunity to see the sign, had an opportunity to sign the petition. And the pastor, the head pastor, senior staff and security personnel watched as the vast majority of the people in that congregation signed the petition, smiled, shook our hands, said, "God bless you, thank you for being here." And the people who didn't sign, they didn't start a ruckus, they didn't make a fuss, they just shuffled on by. And at the end of the second service, the big service, with, several hundred, maybe 1,000 or more people, wave after wave of churchgoer signed the petition, prayed blessings on us, had conversations about the importance of protecting the weakest and most innocent among us, those who can't protect themselves. And the pastor and senior staff and security personnel all witnessed this. And by the end, you could literally see in the eyes of the pastor, his level of boldness was practically raised to the brim, to overflowing, his boldness. And at the end of the service, he came and he requested more petitions. He said, "We're going to put this in the bulletin every week until your deadline. We're going to keep these petitions here. We're going to have someone here to supervise the signing. And we're going to make sure that we get every single person who wants to sign this petition, we're going to give them that opportunity." And I saw in his eyes that dividing line between the professing church and the confessing church. And in a lot of instances, ladies and gentlemen, I think that there is an undue, unwarranted fear of standing up and speaking the truth, even when it may be uncomfortable, even when it may be unpopular. Because for those of you, for those Christian leaders out there who think it may be uncomfortable, it may be unpopular, it may cost you donations in your plate, it may cost you parishioners or church attendees, stand up and step out and do it, and you might find out you're wrong. You might find out that standing up for the truth increases your boldness and increases your ability to reach the lost and the dying, which is what we're called to do as Christians. Anyway, I'm not going to name the church because I haven't been authorized to speak about this in public, but I want to thank senior leadership at Colorado Right to Life and senior leadership at Personhood Colorado for making this event possible. And someday I may be able to expound on it even more because the backstory is even more interesting than the front story that I just told you. But to my Colorado friends, if you haven't gone out and gotten at least 50 signatures, I mean, what are you waiting for? It's time. The deadline is upon us. Let's get out there. Let's do this. For those of you who are listening around the country, the battle is raging. We've got just a few weeks left. And if you can't come to Colorado and gather signatures, write a check. Give a donation online. Go to personhoodcolorado.com. Go to coloradorighttolife.com. Send some money out here our way, folks. We could use it. It'll be put to good use. All right. Now, let's go deeper into the personhood file. From CNN, clinic owners in Jackson, Mississippi, at Jackson's Women's Health Organization. According to CNN, the clinic owners there, which is an abortion clinic, by the way, clinic owners there are in a fight to save the only abortion clinic operating in the state of Mississippi. New state requirements may close their doors forever, making Mississippi the first abortion-free state. And people said that we lost in Mississippi. You remember that? We had a personhood vote in Mississippi. We lost by 6 points. But we changed a lot of political leadership. We changed their hearts. We changed their boldness level. We helped them to realize, the personhood movement, I should say, helped them to realize that if they stood up and stepped up and did the right thing, that they could accomplish far more than they might have thought. And now, the only abortion clinic operating in Mississippi is threatened with closure because a new state law takes effect today. It requires all the clinic's abortion providers to be certified OBGYNs and that all of them must have privileges at a local hospital. Now, I haven't read the law, ladies and gentlemen. I can't say if I endorse it or not, but I do endorse the closure of Mississippi's only operating abortion clinic. And I can tell you that it is because of the brave work of activists on the ground, citizens there in Mississippi, pastors, church leaders, Christians, who stood up and said, we have the answer. It's been revealed to us by God through Jesus Christ. We must not murder the innocent. We must stand up and defend them. And they confronted their political leadership with that question over the past few years. And now action is beginning to take place. The child butcherers at this clinic say that they're trying to comply. They say all their doctors are OBGYNs and they travel in from other states, but only one can practice at a local hospital, and we know why that is. It's because abortionists are bottom-of-the-barrel doctors, just barely one notch below medical marijuana clinic medical directors. Yeah, one notch below them is the abortionists. Anyway, I've got a quote from the clinic owner and president, Diane Derzis, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, D-E-R-Z-I-S, Diane Derzis. She says, this is not about safety. This is about politics. Politics do not need to be in our uterus. That's what she says. I would just say to Ms. Derzis, you know, if you want to kill someone in your uterus or in someone else's uterus, which is what you do every day for a living, if you want to kill other people in utero, well, then we the people, at least the civilized people, we will find a means to stop you. Because there are certain things we simply cannot tolerate, ladies and gentlemen, and the murder of innocent people is one of them. And if you disagree with me, you're not civilized. You're not qualified to participate in civilization. If you believe that people should be free to choose to murder innocent people, which is what freedom to choose is, if that's what you believe, you are simply not qualified to be a member of the family of man. You have made yourself less than human. All right. So let's hope that that clinic doesn't open in the morning. We'll have an update on that, I'm sure, next week. All right, more. One more from the personhood file, ladies and gentlemen. If you're one of those people who just tunes into the show for the jokes, well, just bear with me because we'll get to some of that. But I want to delve back into the personhood file. Oklahoma City, a national campaign to secure victories for legislators who support the recognition of the rights of preborn and to unseat personhood obstructionists. Now, that's the first time I've seen that term. Personhood obstructionists. Now, I pulled this down from SteveDace.com. Steve Dace, one of the biggest talk show hosts in the Midwest, and a true believer, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dace is. He says the campaign to unseat personhood obstructionists continued last Tuesday night in the Oklahoma primary election. Representative Guy Liebman, who voted to prevent the Oklahoma Personhood Act from moving forward, was defeated. That's right. The personhood obstructionist in Oklahoma was defeated. Yes, and SteveDace.com reports the Oklahoma primary vote continues the trend in a string of victories for pro-personhood lawmakers. North Dakota Senator and personhood supporter Joe Miller defeated incumbent Senator Curtis Olofsson, personhood obstructionist, Olofsson single-handedly killed two personhood bills, one in 2009 and one in 2011. He has been defeated as well. So the personhood movement is starting to take our scalps, ladies and gentlemen. And I want to add, who's the Colorado? Ken Buck. You remember Ken Buck, who lost in his Senate race in 2010? That was us. Put his scalp on our wall as well. Because he lost by, I forget how many votes, but definitely he lost by fewer votes than we have active personhood signature gatherers in the state of Colorado. And he threw us under the bus, Mr. Buck did. All right, one more, ladies and gentlemen. Breaking news, Denver from the Dissociated Press. A Denver man collecting signatures for Colorado's personhood ballot initiative that would grant personhood rights to unborn children was assaulted and knocked to the ground on Saturday, suffering injuries that sent him to the hospital. The man was gathering personhood signatures at a local grocery store when another man confronted him. After they exchanged some words, the man was pushed off his bicycle and onto the ground. A witness came forward and gave the man's license plate number and a statement to police. Police have identified the alleged assailant and have made attempts to contact him or whoever was driving the vehicle. The 68-year-old victim, gathering personhood signatures, knocked to the ground, was taken to the hospital by ambulance where he was diagnosed with a broken hip. He is expected to be in St. Joseph's Hospital for several days and may need surgery and pins inserted into his hip. At last report, the assailant remained at large. And this is an exclusive, by the way, to the Weekly Worldview, because I'm not reading to you from a dissociated press report. I'm reading to you from an email that was sent to me from my church, updating all of us on a member of our church who remains in the hospital tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, will you confess Jesus Christ? Will you confess right and wrong when there's more at stake than merely social discomfort? Will you confess him when there is a threat of violence? Will you confess him when you're knocked to the ground and threatened and beaten? Will you confess him? Are you part of the confessing church? Like Everett Stadig, the man who I'm reporting on right now, are you part of the confessing church? Or are you part of the professing church who profess to one another that you're Christian? Are you one of those? Or are you one of the ones who will confess Jesus Christ before men, even when they hate you? It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. As we round second, having now reported on what I would consider the biggest stories trending this week, I want to go now to what is actually in the culture the biggest trending story on the internet right now. Pulled this story down from the Daily Mail over in London. Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes are divorcing after 5 years of marriage. Katie Holmes has filed for divorce. Yes, I know. Hold yourself together. Hold yourself together. Miss Holmes, according to the Daily Mail, is understood to have filed for sole custody of the couple's daughter, little six-year-old Suri, I got to say, that's a cute kid. It's a really cute kid. Yeah. Anyway, that's the biggest story trending. Anything else from here? Quotes from TMZ, Tom Cruise, Scientology, maybe religions involved. He's filming another movie. The pair have not been seen together in public for almost 3 months. You know, there's people at our church who might report that we haven't been seen in public together for 3 months. Well, it's just because we've been out gathering signatures almost every Sunday, and we haven't been to church in a while. Not quite 3 months, though. That would be a red flag.
No, but we're together.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have been seen in public, just not by any of our friends.
That's true.
You're wondering what's up with the McBurneys. Are they still around? Yeah, we're still around. We were seen in public, as a matter of fact, quite a bit this week. And like that. Okay, so while the whole world is upside down and teetering at the rim of hell, Americans are concerned with the divorce of Katie Holmes and Tom. And you know what, folks? I don't blame people because, you know, we're always interested in people and relationships. And this is just another example of heterosexuals bastardizing marriage. It's no wonder the homosexuals are taking over as badly as we treat the institution, for crying out loud.
But they're not together either.
What's that now?
But they're not together either.
Oh, so you think it was just a phony baloney Hollywood marriage designed to increase their box office cachet?
Either. The homos are not together either.
Oh, the homosexuals.
No.
Oh, you're right. As a matter of fact, I saw a headline this week that the first couple that was married under New York City's new, or New York State, I think, under their new homosexual marriage law, they're getting divorced. It's been less than, I know, shocking. Shocking. They probably ran out of crystal meth and decided to get divorced. So a lot of bath salts. It's time to file for divorce. Anyway, I'm just speculating there. That's just my opinion. Meanwhile, there are other important stories on the minds of Americans, on the minds of the professing church. Let's see here. National Geographic Channel ran a poll. They contacted about 1,000 adults across the United States last month for an opinion poll ahead of their new cable television documentary series entitled Chasing UFOs. I'm sure it's going to be a big hit. Big, big hit coming up on the National Geographic Channel. Yeah. Yeah, National Geographic, known for documentaries covering real things. Now they're chasing UFOs. But 36% of the respondents said that they were certain that unidentified flying objects existed. 11% were confident that they themselves had spotted a UFO. And 20% said they knew someone who had claimed to have seen a UFO. Yeah. Oh, and nearly 2 in 3 Americans think President Obama is better suited than Mitt Romney to deal with an alien invasion, according to the poll. So that's what's on the minds of, well, it's probably just on the minds of the promotional department at National Geographic Channel, but, well, there you have it. What is there to say about that? Barack Obama, well, he is good with the drones. You've got to give him that. So if the aliens do attack, I suppose we'll need drones. And Mitt Romney's drone skills are relatively untested. All right. Let's dive into the culture file now, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline San Francisco, from the San Francisco Chronicle. Larry Brinken is a San Francisco resident. And he worked for the San Francisco Human Rights Commission, which is a homosexual advocacy group. He worked there before his retirement back in 2010. Well, he was taken into custody Friday night. This is a big-time male homosexual advocate. He was taken into custody last Friday night, and he spent the night in jail before being released on bail. What do you think he was arrested for? Well, let's dig into the story here. Brinken, well-known homosexual advocate, had pornographic images, some that appear to show children as young as 1 to 3 years old being, I can't read what, I can't even say it, what the pictures were. A search warrant was served by the San Francisco police, and this well-known advocate of male homosexuality was found to be in possession of large quantities of child pornography. During his 22-year tenure at the Human Rights Commission, Brinken was best known for championing equal rights for gays and lesbians. He helped craft San Francisco's groundbreaking Equal Benefits Ordinance, which became a national model for workplace equality. Upon Brinken's retirement, The San Francisco Board of Supervisors approved a resolution declaring the week of February 1st, 2010, Larry Brinken Week in San Francisco, saying his dedication to advance the civil rights of all people has never stopped, unquote. That's a quote from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, who, surprisingly enough, have a collective lisp. Even their press releases, they lisp. Yeah, it's amazing. Former Supervisor Bevan Dufty. Bevan Dufty. You don't know what that is. Bevan Dufty? Anyway, I don't want to make fun of this person's name. Bevan Dufty, who authored the resolution for Larry Brinken Week back in 2010, said he was shocked to learn of Brinken's arrest. Absolutely shocked. I was in despair. I respect him, and I'm confident that there will be due process. I hope there is due process for Mr. Brinken. But we certainly, by reading the story, we don't want to imply that people who advocate for male homosexuality are in any way related to child pornography or any of that. No, absolutely not. They're fine, upstanding citizens. Disgusting, unbelievably disgusting, ladies and gentlemen. But more and more you find out that these loudmouth advocates for the homosexual lifestyle are full-on sexual perverts, and they need to be called what they are, and they need to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Meanwhile, while one of America's premier advocates for deviant lifestyles was arrested for charges that simply cannot be discussed on a broadcast of this quality because of their low and guttural nature. Meanwhile, while all that was going on, at the Pentagon last week, the Pentagon saluted open homosexuals in their ranks, with a civilian lawyer calling on fellow homosexuals to become more visible inside the military in the drive for benefits for same-sex couples. That's the next thing, ladies and gentlemen. Now that they've secured the right to publicly declare their deviancy and their perversion, now they want to have benefits, and eventually they're going to want the chaplain to marry them at the chapel there on base. That's what they're going for. Gordon Tanner, who's a principal deputy general counsel of the Air Force, he's a civilian lawyer. He said at the Defense Department's first gay pride event, he said, "We need to be as visible as we can. Let us be a bridge to our straight allies." The allies were always the good guys, right? They're our straight allies. Excuse me, I don't want a homosexual guy being a bridge on me to anything, okay? Yeah. That just brings a visual that's just disturbing. I don't even talk about that. I've got a quote here from Captain Matthew Phelps. I'm not sure I can read it. Matthew Phelps is a Marine. He's a Marine Corps captain. And he was quoted as saying, "I happen to be gay, but more importantly, I'm a Marine." Makes you want to cry. Makes you want to weep for Smedley Butler and Dan Daly and Chesty Puller and all them Marines. It makes you want to weep. Captain Phelps told of serving in Iraq with heterosexual officers who would gather Saturday nights to smoke cigars and talk about family back home. He said he had to remain quiet in the back of the room. I guess he was made to feel like he couldn't talk about his cruising the bathhouses back in the States while other men were talking about their wives and children. But now he can, and I'm sure he will. We've got more from Captain Phelps, a Marine, for crying out loud. He says, quote, "By virtue of the fact that I wasn't allowed to say anything, I was actually growing more distant from my unit. We hear people talk about unit cohesion and how the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to affect unit cohesion. I would argue that unit cohesion has gotten better." Unquote. I know. Since enlisting in 2002, this Marine Corps captain... Say it ain't so, Chesty. Say it ain't so, Danny Daly. Oh, say it ain't so, Smedley Butler. No, say it ain't so, my Marine Corps. No, this is where we've come. Anyway, he said he risked being fired since his enlistment, but on June 15th, 2012, homosexual Marine Corps Captain Matthew Phelps was at the White House, quote, having champagne with the commander-in-chief. That's right. Barack Hussein Obama, as if to spit in the face of everyone who ever wore the uniform, drank champagne with an openly deviant, perverted Marine Corps captain. Just disgusting. Can I do any? Oh, Captain Phelps. Finally, one more insult, ladies and gentlemen. One more insult to the Marine Corps and everything that's good and righteous and right and wholesome. Captain Phelps' journey from being secretly gay to openly gay, and that don't mean happy, ladies and gentlemen. That means homosexual. Yeah. His journey included taking his boyfriend to a Marine Corps ball in San Diego.
Oh, no.
Say it ain't so, Smedley Butler, no. Chesty Puller spinning in his grave. Anyway, just disgusting. I mean, I try to laugh about it only because I'm enraged. And I want to try to channel my rage into something a little bit more productive. All right. I have talked to you, ladies and gentlemen, about what we are going to do when we finish with this abortion thing, when we end the legalized murder of innocent people in our neighborhoods, in our community, in our so-called civilized nation. At some point in the not-too-distant future, we are going to end it. And not long thereafter, it will be looked upon, not unlike slavery, as anathema, as unthinkable. It will be, ladies and gentlemen. And at that time, we're going to take on other issues. We're going to start with the child molesters. All right. Every convicted child molester must be executed swiftly and painfully, if at all possible. And then there's a long list of other things that we want to get to. Why? Because we have been given the answers. The answers to society's problems have been revealed to the people who are willing to understand them, to the people who are willing to not only have ears, but also to hear. That those answers have been revealed to us by the living God, the creator of the universe, via his son, Jesus Christ, and his word, the Holy Bible. So we have the answers. And I go through all of that to get to this from NBC in Connecticut. They passed a law in a Massachusetts town to Middleborough, Massachusetts. They passed a law to fine people for swearing in public. Yeah. Now, I'm not for fining people. I'm for caning them. But that all that aside, it's interesting to see that there's someone who actually cares. There's someone in government who actually cares that the society has become so profane that you can barely take your kids out in public anymore. I mean, unless they're already corrupted by the public schools. I mean, if you take we've got homeschool kids who have not been yet utterly corrupted by the public schools, and it's hard to take them out in public because of the profanity and the tattoos and the bumper stickers and the T-shirts, for crying out loud. Well, in Middleborough, they're trying to do something. They're a little misguided, but at least they're trying. At least they care. So they passed a law to fine people $20 for public swearing. So now, last week, several dozen people held a profanity-laced rally to protest the new law. Some people shouted curse words while others carried profane posters supporting free speech at the rally. Now, people who supported the new law also showed up, but they weren't as vulgar and profane, so they didn't get quoted much in this story, which is from NBC. The protest rally was organized by Adam Kokesh, a libertarian who publishes podcasts online from a Virginia studio. He says police can, quote, he says they can steal from you if they don't like what's coming out of your mouth. And on that point, I agree with Mr. Kokesh. They shouldn't steal any of your money, Mr. Kokesh. The next time you're caught swearing in public, they should strip you to your waist and whip you within an inch of your life. How about that? You know, we got no time for it. We got no time to listen to more Bob and the Boys here. We got to turn them down because we're rounding third and we're headed to home, ladies and gentlemen. as we come to the end of another powerful broadcast hour here at the Weekly Worldview, your source to catch the pulse of conservative talk on the internet. I do a podcast out of a studio in Denver, but it's not profanity-laced. Anyway, I want to go back into the culture file. Another story from the Daily Mail over in London, but a story that happened in Maricopa County Superior Court. Michael Marin was found guilty of arson by a jury there in Maricopa County. He appeared shocked at the reading of the verdict, and he closed his eyes as the verdict was read before he put something in his mouth, washed it down with a liquid, then fell to the floor, convulsed for a few minutes, and was pronounced dead.
Wow.
He killed himself right there in court in front of God and everybody. Yeah, prosecutors had claimed that Marin set fire to his house in desperation because he could no longer pay the mortgage. And he got caught, and he got convicted, and what was his solution? He killed himself right there in court. I wonder if when the boys in Black Sabbath penned that song, Suicide Solution, I wonder if they knew how prophetic they were. Because suicide is increasingly becoming an escape, a solution for people. Why? Because the entire culture does not acknowledge the fact that it's appointed to man once to die and then the judgment. People don't understand that suicide's not a solution. It's not an escape. You're going to face the living God. And it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. It used to be, ladies and gentlemen, that our society, even though I will be the first to admit that our society has long been dominated by the professing church and not the confessing church, even the professing church put up a stigma against things like suicide, against things like adultery and homosexual and molesting children and profanity. There was some cultural stigma against sin. And there was some knowledge that permeated the psyche of everyone who grew up in our civilized society that there was a God and that there was a judgment. But that's all gone, ladies and gentlemen. We're two generations separated from that now. And so suicide is exploding. It's epidemic. And here's a guy. This is a guy who attended Yale Law School, for crying out loud. Collected Picasso art. Seemingly a cultured fellow. But he found the words to a Black Sabbath song to be his cultural touchstone. For whatever reason. All right. More into the justice file. Oh, here we go. I've got two stories that are connected, ladies and gentlemen. Not on their face, but I'm going to connect them up for you. Washington, D.C. The Supreme Court ruled last week, according to the Associated Press, that it's unconstitutional for state laws to require juveniles convicted of murder to be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, the Supreme Court's decision left open the possibility that judges could sentence juveniles to life without parole in individual cases, but said that state laws cannot automatically impose such a sentence. They called it cruel and unusual punishment. Yeah. Oh, which I agree, by the way, that life in prison without parole is indeed cruel and unusual punishment. So, surprisingly enough, Justice Elena Kagan wrote the opinion for the majority. I'm sure I don't agree with her opinion, but I agree with the fact. She was joined by Anthony Kennedy, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor. The usual suspects. Again, stumbling backwards into the proper decision for the wrong reasons. John Roberts, Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito dissented, and kids should be sentenced, or could be sentenced, automatically to life in prison, proving that none of them know right from wrong, just for different reasons than Kagan and Sotomayor and Breyer, Ginsburg, and the other heathens. Yeah, they don't know right from wrong either. They're just all confused for different reasons. And that leads me to this story, folks. From CBS in Chicago, a 7-year-old girl was gunned down as her mother watched while she sold lemonade in front of her West Side home. Now a minister's group is trying to persuade people to turn over the killer. Mayor Rahm Emanuel said to the unknown killer last Thursday And he said this with a straight face, ladies and gentlemen. Rahm Emanuel said, quote, "How dare you?" unquote. Mr. Emanuel, you hypocrite. You advocate, you promote, and you regulate murder every day. And now you ask those among you who have learned from your political leadership, who have been educated by you and the system in which you are now a prime apparatchik, you have the temerity to say, "How dare you?" You hypocrite. How dare you, Mr. Emanuel? Back to the Chicago CBS story. Ministers said the shooting had struck a nerve in the city. And a spokesman said he hopes that someone who knows someone who knows what happened to this little girl selling lemonade, he hopes that, someone will come forward with information. There's been a cash reward of, some money offered. $3,000 reward for information, leading to the arrest and conviction of the gunman who killed Heaven Sutton, 7 years old, while she was with her mother and other family members outside of their home at a lemonade stand. This struck a nerve with me because my daughter had a lemonade stand over the past couple weeks. The fatal gunshot was fired by a gangbanger, apparently, according to CBS in Chicago. The fatal gunshot was fired by a gangbanger who was aiming at a rival who had stopped to buy lemonade at the little girl's lemonade stand. So I wouldn't be surprised if the next step that Rahm Emanuel and the city council in Chicago do is ban lemonade stand. That's probably their solution. The police say that the detectives know which gangs were involved in the shooting and said the police expect to wrap up the investigation quickly. So just a note to Rahm Emanuel and the city council and the political leadership there in Chicago. The solution is not to ban lemonade stands or to set an age limit so girls under 7 don't sell lemonade and put themselves in danger. The solution, upon conviction of this murderer, is a swift and public execution. That is the solution, Mr. Emanuel. And it's not hypocritical prose like, "How dare you?" What a cliche, you hypocritical liar. You have worked your entire political career to put in place the legal and the judicial and the governmental system that led to this 7-year-old girl being shot down at her lemonade stand. You filthy hypocrite. How dare you, indeed. All right, we're almost out of time. Some quick stories, ladies and gentlemen. The Miami Face Eater, you remember that? The cannibal in Miami? They said he had no bath salts in his system. Let's see. He chewed off a big chunk of the face of a homeless man. They didn't find, toxicology tests found only components of marijuana in his system. No bath salts.
I thought marijuana is a happy drug.
I know. I thought it was medicine, for crying out loud. It's, yeah, I don't understand all that. The Justice Department says it will not prosecute Attorney General Eric Holder. Big surprise there. Last Thursday, Eric Holder became the first Attorney General to be held in contempt of Congress, and nobody knows what to do. The Republicans don't know what to do because they're afraid of offending the liberals. They remind me of people in the professing church. They don't understand the power of the truth. They don't understand that if you stand up and act and do what's right, the majority of the lemmings and the stupid people in society, which is most of society now, they will line up behind you because they're looking for a leader who will do right. The Republicans should arrest Eric Holder. The sergeant of arms should put him in handcuffs and drag him off the House floor at their next committee hearing. And America will stand up and cheer. And for you preachers in the pulpit who are afraid to discuss right and wrong, good and evil, heaven and hell, stand up and do what's right. Your congregation will flock to you. People want to know what's right. People want to be told what's right. They want to be taught what's right and wrong. People want to be taught what's right and wrong. They don't want wishy-washiness. That's led us here, where people are eating faces and shooting seven-year-olds and taking their boyfriends to the Marine Corps ball, for crying out loud. All right. do I want... Let's we got to wrap this up, folks. Jimmy Carter, according to the AP, he's accusing the Obama administration of violating 10 of the 30 articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So forget the Bible, the U.S. Constitution, anything. Jimmy Carter's mad at Barry for violating articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. He says he's using drones to kill terrorists. Mr. Carter, killing murderers is in the top three of the most important means to assure human rights. I hate that term, human rights. They're God-given rights. Because if it was up to the humans, none of us would have any rights. We would all be slaves, Mr. Carter. And the one thing good that Barry Ho has done in his administration is kill terrorists. And Carter's offended by that. Anyway, Jimmy Carter, get out of here with that. All right. Last week, I agreed with a member of the NAACP who resigned because they've endorsed homosexual marriage. Shockingly enough, I found another example where I agree with the NAACP. A study paid for by the Texas Lottery Commission says the people most likely to play the Pick 3 lottery are those making $20,000 a year or less below the poverty line. And people who are unemployed are more likely to buy scratch-off tickets than those who have jobs. So far in 2012, Texans have spent more than $3 billion on lottery tickets. Well, the NAACP, they voted recently to urge state officials to do away with the lottery. The Dallas chapter of the NAACP wants to see the state lottery put out of business because it unduly affects the poor. And I agree with them. I agree with the NAACP. We've got the government running a numbers racket, which is a tax on poor people and stupid people. If you play the lottery, in my opinion, you're stupid. And there's a tax on stupid. It's called the lottery. How often is it I agree with the NAACP? Truly a momentous week in the news. Ladies and gentlemen, are you part of the professing church or are you part of the confessing church? The day will come when you will be sifted and the truth will be told. All right, that's it for the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Darren, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. And, of course, let me say thank you to my extremely attractive audio engineer. Great with the bumps today, by the way. I'll talk to you next week, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.